Yes, Prabhu, you are the host.
Yeah. Okay. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shyadvaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So thank you all very much for joining today's session. So we have been discussing from this book Madhurya Kadambini for the last, I don't know, maybe close to a year or so now, maybe a little less than that. So we have been discussing from this third, from the third chapter of this Madhurya Kadambini, and we were discussing about the offenses to the holy name. And we have been discussing about the first offense to the holy name, which is to blaspheme a devotee who has dedicated his life for propagating the holy name of the Lord. And in that, we were discussing last week about how the culture of respect is what makes a person actually immune to the problem of Vaishnavaninda or offending a Vaishnava. So unless one has a generic disposition of respecting everyone and everything, it is very, very difficult to avoid offending Vaishnavas. If one has, this was the theme that we were discussing, that if one has is very disrespectful by nature, then one has to be very careful, because it's very difficult for such people to avoid Vaishnav aparad. So it is better to, in general, cultivate a respectful attitude, like we were discussing examples last time, that you may want to just move a bucket using your feet, or, you know, or move something using your feet. They are probably symptoms that our immunity to offending Vaishnavas is very low. And we have to consciously work on this, because we can't afford to lose our hard-earned spiritual credits by offending Vaishnavas. It is better to develop a generic respectful attitude. This is something that we were discussing last week. Okay, I'll start my video. Okay, so then this was then we saw the example of Rahuguna, who was a king who had offended Jadabharata, who was actually not very it was not very clear that he was a very advanced devotee. So he offended him, and eventually he offered offers obeisances to everyone. I offer respects obeisances to devotees who may be in the form of children, who may be in the form of youth. And he says that, because if I don't have this generic respectful disposition, what if in future also they become devotees? Then it will have an effect, right? And then we saw from examples of Kapila Dev speaking that even though one may worship the deity form of the Lord very attentively, but if he does not respect the presence of, if he does not respect other people or other living entities, not seeing my presence in their heart in the form of super soul, then such a person is doing false worship of the deities, he says. This is not real, like that. But at the same time, we saw that in our Vaishnava understanding, respecting means not to give the same respect to everyone, irrespective of their level of consciousness. We want to give, we are equal in the sense that we want to respect everyone. But the kind of respect and the level of respect is according to the level of development of their consciousness. Sakale samman korite shakati deho nata jata jata. Tabe to gaibo harinama suke aparada habe hata. Right? So, and then in this context, we saw that Bhagavatam many times talks about, you know, the gradation of consciousness in various species, and one should be willing to give respect according to that. We saw this. And then the last theme that we discussed on this topic of Vaishnavananda are the 12 types of offenses that we may be prone to committing. One is to disrespect a person or respect a person based on his high or low birth. To disrespect or respect a Vaishnava. So you may say, oh Prabhu, you are born in a Vaishnava, you are born in a Brahmana family. Oh, very great Prabhu, very great. So this may seem like actual glorification, but this is actually glorifying a material characteristic of a Vaishnava, which means for the same purpose, we may actually disrespect another Vaishnava who may not have a high birth. So we have to be careful. If we are adoring some material aspect of a Vaishnava, maybe we might disrespect another Vaishnava who may not possess that material aspect. So we should be glorifying and appreciating Vaishnavas for their spiritual characteristics, even if they may have some materially attractive thing, but it should not make us so excited. We don't have to become so excited about it. Then the second thing is sharira nirupana, means to disrespect someone because of his body, like we see in the case of Garuda, who had the form of a bird, and Hanumanji, who was like half monkey, you can say. And bhava nirupan. Bhava nirupan means disrespecting someone because of his age. Oh, Dhruva, he was just 5 years old, you know, like that. Or ashrama nirupan, to consider someone unqualified for bhakti because of his ashrama. So Dhanurdas was a disciple of Ramanujacharya, and he was a grihastha. And the renunciant disciples of Ramanujacharya were always little bit disdainful towards Dhanurdas, because Dhanurdas was a grihastha, and not grihastha, he was actually so much infatuated by a particular lady, and he was not even interested in taking darshan of the Supreme Lord, because he was so absorbed and infatuated in taking darshan of this lady. But eventually, by mercy of Chaitanya, by mercy of Ramanujacharya, he became a very, very exalted devotee. But his renunciant disciples of Ramanujacharya were a little bit disdainful, because they thought that they were very glorious. But they didn't know that in the heart of Dhanurdas, he was such a humble soul, much more humbler than all these various kinds of renunciant devotees. And eventually Ramanujacharya taught them a very good lesson to show that who is actually renounced. And eventually Dhanurdas was actually more renounced. Then there is something called as avayava nirupana. Avayava nirupana means disrespecting a Vaishnava because of his bodily deformities. So this we see in the case of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami did not offend. Actually, he had his eyes closed and he was meditating on a particular very jovial leela between Radha and Krishna, and he was laughing. And at that very same point, there was a Vaishnava who had a deformed leg, and he was limping and passing, you know, he was just crossing Rupa Goswami. And this Vaishnava saw that Rupa Goswami was laughing. So he thought that maybe he is laughing because I have a deformed feet I am limping. So he actually felt very bad. And eventually Sanatan Goswami requested Rupa Goswami to apologize to that Vaishnava when he realized. I mean, this is something, I mean, I'm just cutting the long story short, but the point is that we have to be careful. The sixth is alasya nirupan, to disrespect someone because of his habits. Because we all come into Krishna consciousness carrying our own not so pleasant material habits. But we should understand that the path of bhakti is so powerful that over a period of time, all those all our struggles due to our past habits will be removed. So therefore, one should not judge or ridicule another Vaishnava because of his habits, because he is definitely practicing a process which is capable of removing him, of helping him out of those habits, right? Then the seventh is called as Vasa Nirupan. Vasa Nirupan means to consider someone unqualified for bhakti because he is not staying in a dham. Oh, you are not a dhamvasi, like that. This especially is true when oneself is fortunate enough to stay in a dham. We may say, you are staying in Mumbai, you must be a very materialistic person, like that, if one thinks like that, if one is not staying in a dham. And then next is Bandhu Nirupana. Bandhu Nirupana means this is a very dangerous kind of offense. We have to be very careful. Many of us, we may be prone to committing this offense, is to disrespect a Vaishnava because of being a family member. And this is something we have to be very careful. We may be prone to committing this offense. And then, ninth offense is Prakasha Nirupana. Prakasha Nirupana means to respect only one's guru and disrespect all others. This indicates a very, very materialistic attachment to one's guru also. Our attachment to our guru is born out of our false ego. That is why we are not able to see other people who may be representatives of that guru, who may be representing many of the qualities that the guru is displaying, maybe to a smaller degree, but still nevertheless displaying those qualities. We can't identify it because our affection is not for our guru. Our affection is for our own ego. So if we are able to respect only our guru and not anyone else, then we in reality don't even have affection for our guru. We are just consumed by our own false ego, actually. So this we have to be very careful. This kind of an attitude is actually not pleasing to guru also. A bona fide guru is not very pleased if the disciple is only so much absorbed in that guru only and disrespecting other Vaishnavas. If a guru is supporting it, that is fit to be rejected, actually. So that guru is not a bona fide guru. Any bona fide guru will encourage his disciples to be very respectful and loving towards all the Vaishnavas, irrespective of whoever they may be. Right. Then the tenth type of offense is Prakara Nirupana, to respect only those close to the guru and disrespect all others. This is also a very very disgusting kind of attitude, that you will respect only those who are close to the guru. This is like a very materialistic understanding, actually. A very materialistic mentality. And the 11th is Vartana Nirupan. Vartana Nirupan means to insult someone because of their occupation. This is not a very good occupation. You know, how can you be a good Vaishnava like that? And the last is Dosha Nirupana, to find fault even with Shastri characters. Like, for example, Draupadi, how can she be a good Vaishnava? You know, she married 5 husbands. You know, she must be a very person of bad character, like that. You start judging Shastric characters only. Unless some acharyas have mentioned something like that, we have no business actually to judge the characters of the Shastras like that. I think, yeah, this is where we ended our discussion last week. But before we move on to today's discussion, are there any quick comments, discussion points, questions based on what we have discussed till now? First offense we have completed. Now we are going to start the second offense to the holy name. Yes, Madhumati Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for the wonderful recap, Prabhu. It's really nice. I have a question with regards to the Vaishnava Ninda. You know, in the third canto, how the, you know, four Kumaras, they cursed Jay and Vijay. Lord comes here, and then Lord comes to pacify. And then, you know, the Prabhupada writes in the 15th chapter, Prabhupada writes, because the four Kumaras have committed Vaishnava Aparad, cursing those two doormen. And what is the what's the implication of that aparad for the four sages? Did they repented, of course, but did they have to do any atonement or any repercussions for that? Or
they eventually, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in the commentary that the result of that Vaishnava Aparad, because this was not an ordinary Vaishnava Aparad, this was an Vaishnava Aparad committed to Nitya Parshadas, eternal associates of the Lord. And not only it was not an ordinary offense, they actually cursed them to go to the material world. It was like such a serious thing. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions that they were permanently relegated to Shanta Rati, even though they were qualified to become, to reach the stage of Prema. But because of this offense, they were permanently relegated to the position of Shanta Rati, which means they will remain at Bhava only without developing a very active relationship. They lost the opportunity eternally to develop an active relationship with Krishna. It is very, very passive. A very passive relationship is what they eventually developed, which is a great loss, actually.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Thank you.
Prabhuji, Hare Krishna.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Again, we have this Kumara Sampradaya, right? So I don't know if it is from the four Kumaras, but we say that Kumara Sampradaya is a bona fide Sampradaya where Krishna is accepted as the... Absolutely.
Yeah, it is a bona fide sampradaya, and it was a mistake on their part. That is why you don't go and discuss this episode with the with those who are coming from the Kumara Sampradaya. Why unnecessarily agitate them? We don't do that.
No, but Prabhuji, you said the four Kumaras, they'll be eternally in Shantarash, right, Prabhuji? Did I get that correct?
Yeah. That's what our acharyas say.
So those who are following Kumara Sampradaya, that means they are aiming for the Shantarasha Meloka.
I have no idea about that. I have no idea. Apart from our Sampradaya, there are no other Sampradaya which actually talk about Rasa so much.
Oh.
There is no description of Rasa as much. So by default, they may get some Dasya Rasa or something like that. Even in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, even though there are great personalities who showed, Vatsalya Rasa and Madhurya Rasa, like the case of Andal and others. But when it comes to sadhana and cultivation, these kind of rasas are invariably not discussed at all. So by default, they aspire for Dasya Rasa only. There is no significant discussion about any of the other rasas, actually. So even though those rasas are there, but there is no sadhana that is prescribed for attaining those rasas. So ours is the only sampradaya where Srila Rupa Goswami has, presented such clear understanding of, rasa. And how do you aspire for it? How do you cultivate it, what nourishes that rasa, what kind of association one should take, what are the literatures that one should read. And everything is so systematically presented, but there is no other sampradaya in which this kind of a systematic guideline for cultivating a particular rasa is given. So most of them probably end up with dasya rasa only, with the vatsalya, madhurya, sakya rasas being a prerogative of only the nitya parshadas, the eternal associates of the Supreme Lord. And only for more or less for in most of the other sampradayas, it is only dasya and shanta rasa that is available for sadhana siddhas. Like that. There may be rare cases where someone may cultivate other rasas, very rare cases, but in most cases it is only dasya and shanta only.
Thank you, Prabhupada. Thank you so much.
Anything else anyone would like to share, add, ask?
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada, and Dr. Pranam. Prabhupada, I was also just thinking of that when you were answering, when someone was asking the same question, that though you said that they did not, the four Kumaras did not progress to Prema and other further steps, but then we always give the example of Shantarasa. In Shantarasa, the relationship is of four Kumaras with the God, with the Lord. Mm-hmm. So,
Shantarasa is
not that prominent. Prabhupada means it's not that equal to Sakya or Dasya or Prema. What?
It is, yeah. First thing is Shantarati is at the stage of Bhava. It is not at Prema. Bhava is the budding stage of Prema. And the second thing is Shanta is not a very active rasa. There is not a very evolved relationship with the person. Like say, for example, from a distance you are admiring someone. So that distant admiration is a kind of a relationship, but it's not a very evolved relationship. There is no give and take. There is no interaction. There is no active service. So even though that is like the kind of relationship that they have with the Supreme Lord. It's not that they don't worship the Supreme Lord. They do worship the Supreme Lord. But that is a very, very weak, you can say like a weak relationship. So yeah, that's our understanding.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Dandavat Pranams.
Yes, Madhavita.
Can I ask a question, Prabhu?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So with regards to the different rasas that you were talking about, these rasas, each of them in their own rasa, they feel satisfied and they feel content. So it's not that now we're discussing about what is better and what is not, in the sense, okay, this person is viewing from a distance and he may not get that so much kind of bliss like a person who's able to serve personally will get. I just want your thoughts on that, Prabhu. And another question,
let's take one question at a time.
Sure.
So yeah, I mean, like say for example, you are very satisfied in your relationship with your mother, and I am very satisfied in my relationship with my mother, and we don't want to trade our positions. But from a neutral point of view, this is what Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Tatastahaya, he says, from a neutral point of view, if you observe, probably my relationship with my mother or probably your relationship with your mother is more intimate than the other person's relationship with the mother. Even though we both are equally satisfied, we both are satisfied. It may not be equal. We both are perfectly satisfied in our relationship with each other's mother. But from a neutral point of view, one may observe that either one of our relationship with our own mothers is probably more intimate than the relationship with the others. So therefore, a person at the in Shantarasa is perfectly satisfied, but the level of bliss that he derives from that relationship is it will definitely be inferior to the bliss that he might derive, if someone else may derive with a more evolved rasa. But the point is that then it's not like the person will be more happy, the person in Shanta rasa will be more happy if he gets Madhurya rasa. He will not be happy actually, because that is not his preferred relationship with Krishna. So we do discuss about, everyone is satisfied, which is true. We are not debating or denying that. But from a neutral point of view, the more evolved relationships are more intimate. Even though the lesser evolved people possessing lesser evolved relationships, they still would not want to trade their positions with others, because they are also perfectly satisfied. So there is a question of perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So Shantarasa is perfect. They are perfectly satisfied. But the higher rasas are more perfectly satisfied and most perfectly satisfied. Like that. Is that okay, Mathai?
Yes, perfect, Prabhuji. That was my follow-up question also, whether they'll be happier in other rasas. And another question that I had is, in terms of, in the sense, we've chosen Radha and Krishna, and then we are progressing towards the path. What if our spiritual nature is something else other than the worship of Radha and Krishna, if at all? I don't know, if just put in a scenario, we have chosen that path, and obviously the spontaneous path will show us and help us determine, at advanced stage, what our position is exactly. But we've already chosen this path and we're moving towards that path to achieve a goal. I'm just wondering whether at some point in time, would it ever contradict our original nature, which is destined for us at... I just don't know. It's just very imaginative question.
Yeah, I can choose to answer this question, but it is not relevant to the discussion that we are currently undergoing. Sure. But I have described it in detail in... it's a very long discussion. I don't want to get into the details, because many of the devotees here are, they are more of preliminary discussions we are having here. If for further reference, you can refer to Demystifying Raganuga Bhakti. Those sessions I have discussed this in great detail.
Thank you so much, Hare Krishna.
Okay, anything else before we move ahead? We are going to move ahead to the second offense to the holy name. We have spent a lot of time discussing the first offense of Vaishnava Ninda. But anything else you want to, anyone would like to ask about this first offense of offending Vaishnavas or blaspheming Vaishnavas? Okay. So if there is no further discussion, we'll move on to the next second of the offenses, which is misunderstanding the position of Vishnu and the demigods, right? So this is the second offense. To think that the demigods are on the same level of Vishnu, or a particular demigod is on the same level of Vishnu or even greater than Vishnu. So this is an offense, because this is an offense because this is not true. Right, because if the Prime Minister of United States is there, and you are supposed to give a bouquet and garland the Prime Minister, but instead of doing that, if you go to his bodyguard and give the bouquet to him and garland him, that's in one sense an insult to the Prime Minister actually, right? So we are not about we are not advocating, or the Shastras are not advocating, that you should disrespect the demigods. We should not disrespect, because disrespecting the demigods is also an offense, because they are empowered representatives of the Supreme Lord. But at the same time, the respect should be proportionate to their position. you cannot give them the same respect that you would give to the Supreme Lord, because that would be an insult to the Supreme Lord. So therefore, this is the next offense, and we are going to discuss this in detail actually. Okay, so first thing is we have to understand the gradation of conscious living entities, right? So here it is mentioned, this is from some portions are from Harinam Chintamani and some portions are from Madhurya Kadambini. So here he says, now we will consider the second aparad of misunderstanding the position of Vishnu, Shiva and the demigods. Okay, so conscious beings are of two types, Ishvara Chaitanya and Jiva Chaitanya. Ishvara Chaitanya means independent, Jiva Chaitanya means dependent. Okay, so there are two categories of conscious beings. One are the independent living entities, the second are the dependent living entities. Then he says, Ishvara Chaitanya is of two types. Okay, first is that which is not at all touched by Maya, this is Vishnu Tattva. And for the Lord's pastimes, accepts the touch of Maya, which is Shambhu Tattva, this is Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is Ishvara Tattva. So there is gradation even in Ishvara Tattva. Okay. In Ishvara Tattva, actually, Vishnu Tattva is superior. And then Shambhu Tattva is inferior. So this is Lord Shiva comes in this category. Even though he is an independent living entity, but still in the ultimate sense, he comes in touch with Maya, and that makes Lord Shiva as little bit inferior to Vishnu, right? The first type of Ishvara is called by such names as Narayana, Hari, etc. So all the Vishnu Tattvas fall within the first category. Harir hi nirguna sakshat purusha prakrite paraha. It is Hari who is directly the non-material Lord, transcendental to material nature. It is completely transcendental. The Supreme Lord is not at all touched by the modes of material nature. Whereas Lord Shiva, for functional purposes, he comes in touch with the three modes, but he is not affected by the three modes. But Lord Vishnu does not even come in touch with the three modes, right? The second type of Ishvara is called by such names as Shiva. Shiva Shaktiyuta Shashvat Trilingo Guna Samvrita, Bhagavatam says. Lord Shiva voluntarily accepts the three modes and appears to be covered by them, but he is not really covered, because Lord Shiva is a very exalted personality. Like that. Even though Shiva appears to be covered by the gunas, one should not think that he is in the category of Jiva. So he is not in the category of Jiva. He is a different kind of entity in itself. He is not a Jiva. He is not a spirit soul like we are. He is not a more evolved spirit soul. But he is of a different category only. So he is neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He is intermediate. Right? He is Shiva Tattva or Shambhu Tattva. Right? So, as mentioned in Brahma Samhita, he says, Shiram Yata Dadi Vikara Vishesha Yogat Sanjayate Nahitata Pritagasti Hetoho. Ya Shambhutam Apitata Samupaiti Karyat Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bajami. A simple translation is that Lord Shiva is a transformation of the Lord, just as yogurt is a transformation of milk, right? In one sense, yogurt is non-different from milk, but at the same time, yogurt is different from milk also, right? So in the Puranas and other scriptures as well, Lord Shiva is glorified as Ishvara. As we saw, Ishvara Tattva or independent living entities are of two types. One is the Vishnu Tattva and another is Shiva Tattva. So Shiva is also an Ishvara, but little bit on the lower pedestal compared to Vishnu. How? We are going to see that now. In the Bhagavatam it is said, Sattvam Rajas Tamayiti Prakritir Gunastair Yukta Paramapurusha Eka Ihasya Datte Stityadaye Hari Virinchi Hareti Samgya Shreyamsi Tatra Kalu Sattva Tanor Nrinamsyuhu. So he says, Paramapurusha Ekaha, the one supreme Purusha, Prakritir Gunastair Yukta, accepting the Gunas of Prakriti. So this one supreme Purusha is Lord Narayana or Lord Vishnu. Okay. So he accepts gunas of Prakriti. What are the gunas of Prakriti? Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Goodness, passion and ignorance. For what purpose he accepts? Creation, maintenance and destruction. So for creation he accepts the mode of passion in the form of Brahma. For maintenance, he accepts the mode of goodness in the form of Lord Vishnu. And for destruction, he accepts the mode of ignorance in the form of Lord Shiva. And then he is called Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. The best results for the devotees will come from Vishnu with Shuddha Sattva body. So even though it is the one Lord only who expands as Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva in some cases, Brahmaji is mostly a Jivatma. But in some cases, Lord Vishnu himself takes the role of Brahma if there is no qualified living entity who is available to perform that role of Brahma. Lord Vishnu only takes that role. But even when Lord Vishnu takes the role of Brahma, still he should not be worshipped as a Supreme Lord. Only Lord Vishnu has to be worshipped as a Supreme Lord. Like that. So he says in this shloka, it is also generally understood that Brahma may also be considered an Ishvara. So Brahma is also a controller, but he is not, Ishvara means controller. So in that sense, even we are controllers, right? We do have our zone of control, but we are not Ishvara Tattva. So Ishvara Tattva is Lord Shiva and Vishnu only. Even Brahmaji is not Ishvara Tattva. But what then? Why do the Shastras sometimes talk about Brahma also being a controller, right? So he says, Brahma's position as Ishvara or Lord should be understood as power invested in a Jiva by the Supreme Lord. Ishvara Avesh, they are called as Shakti Avesh. A part of the potency of the Supreme Lord being bestowed upon a particular qualified living entity to perform a particular activity, like in the case of Brahma, creation of the material universe. For the purpose of creation of the material universe, a part of the power of the Lord is bestowed upon Brahma, who is generally a living entity. Okay. So, and this comes in the Brahma Samhita. Bhaswan yata ashmashakaleshu nijeshu tejaha sviyam kiyat prakatayat yapitadvadatra Brahma ya esha jagadanda vidhana karta Govinda madhi purusham tamaham bhajami. So he says, Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, Brahma, from whom Brahmaji, Ya Esha Jagadanda Vidana Karta. from whom Brahmaji receives some portion of the power to maintain, create and maintain this material world. So it is a received power. He is not inherently a controller. He is an empowered personality, that's all. And when his role is over, that empowerment will also be taken away. He can't choose to keep it. Okay. And he gives an example to prove this point. Yata Bhaswan, just as Bhaswan is sun. Bhaswan, Bhaskara, like that. So Bha means radiance. Bhaswan means the possessor of radiance. And Bhaskara means one who makes other things and one who illuminates other things with his radiance. That is Bhaskara. So sun, the sun is called as Bhaswan, Bhaskara, like that. He gives sun as an analogy. Just as the sun, Nijeshu Tejaha Prakatayati. He bestows a part of his power. Ashma Shakaleshu in effulgent gems. Sviyam Kiyat, that bear the name such as Suryakanta. There are some transparent stones which are called as Suryakanta. So Suryakanta, why? Because when sunlight falls on these transparent gems, some people say that Suryakanta is actually a magnifying glass. Okay, and when sun's rays falls on that magnifying glass, actually it burns papers and leaves just like a sun would burn when there is proximity. So it acts almost like a sun. But what if you hold a magnifying glass to a paper in the middle of the night? We can keep holding for hours together, but until sun rises, nothing will happen. So the magnifying glass has no potency of its own. Its potency is borrowed from the sun. So similarly, Brahmaji also has no potency for universal regulation on his own. So he is a controller because he borrows that power of control from Krishna for a while, for a short while when he is actually regulating the functions of a universe. But once that role is over, then the empowerment is also taken away from him. So this is explaining because below Vishnu, the next highest are Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma only. So if their positions are resolved, there is no need to resolve the positions of other lower demigods, because everyone accepts that the other lower demigods are lower than even Lord Shiva and Brahma. So therefore, in this section, there is description about the position of Brahma and Shiva, which means you accept that the other lower demigods are anyway lower than them. So there is no question of comparing them with Vishnu, like that. So he says, one must discern who is worthy of worship or not on the basis of Nirguna and Saguna. That is, with no material qualities, that is Vishnu, and with a touch of material qualities, that is Shiva and Brahma. Okay. So sometimes Lord Shiva can also be a Jivatma. In some universes, sometimes for whatever reasons, what is the reason that is not mentioned? Lord Vishnu himself, a Jiva can take the role of Lord Shiva just for the purpose of destroying the universe. Okay. And Brahmaji is mostly a Jiva, but sometimes Lord Vishnu can take the role of Brahma if there is no qualified living entity available in that particular universe. But this is very rare. Generally, Brahmaji is a Jiva. And Lord Shiva as a Jiva is very rare. Generally, he is an Ishvara Tattva only. Okay. So, it is mentioned that and when Brahmaji is a Jiva, it is not always that he is a pure devotee. So sometimes he can be a pure devotee and sometimes he can be a mixed devotee also. Right? So it is, to be a pure devotee is not a prerequisite to take the post of Brahma. In fact, to take the post of Brahma, the prerequisite is very, very, very high level of piety. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is this verse which says, Swadharma nishtat shatajanma bippuman virinchitameti tataparam himam avyakritam bhagavatota vaishnavam padam yataham vibhuda kalatyaye. So this comes in the chapter which is called as Rudra Geeta. In Rudra Geeta, Lord Shiva himself says, Swadharma nishta shatajanma bippuman virinchitameti. If a person is perfectly practices the Vedic path of Varnashrama or the pious life for 100 lifetimes continuously, then he becomes qualified to take the post of Brahmaji. So piety, a very high level of piety is a prerequisite to take the post of Brahma. But in some cases, there could be a qualified Brahma, could be a pure devotee of the Lord also, just like the current Brahma, who is our Sampradaya's Acharya. He is a pure devotee, but it is not a prerequisite. Okay. So he says, being different types of Chaitanya. Chaitanya means conscious entity. Brahma and Vishnu are completely distinct. Brahma is a Jiva and Vishnu is Ishvara. So they are completely different. So they should not be taken to be the same. Okay. I don't want to cover too much without taking any questions, but are there any quick comments, questions before we move forward? Yes, Madhumati Mataji.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Prabhu. The question is like, you know, that just now you said about the current Brahma is of course a devotee, and how come the pure devotees aspire, or how do they take up the positions? Normally, they wouldn't like to take like Brahma's position or any position for that matter.
Yeah. But like say for example, but after becoming after getting the position of Brahma, one can become a pure devotee also, right? That is possible. Yes. So that is the case of Brahmaji, the current Brahma.
So once you become pure devotee, then they may not aspire for the position.
Yeah, they may not aspire. Like for example, the next Indra is going to be Bali Maharaj. Right? But Bali Maharaj, when he at one point he was aspiring to become the Indra and he gained the qualification also. And after that, when he met Vamanadev and surrendered to Vamanadev, he became a pure devotee. But he had gained that qualification and entitlement before he became a pure devotee only. Like that.
Thank you, bro. Makes sense.
Yeah. Anything else anyone would like to add?
So Prabhuji, can you please throw some light on Shiva being Jiva Tattva?
Yeah, I mean, there is not much details given about it, but for the purpose of universal destruction, on some days of Brahma or during some Brahmandas, Laghu Bhagavatamrita explains that Lord Shiva, that role of destruction can be given to an empowered living entity, and it may not necessarily be Lord Shiva himself personally who may do it, that is mentioned, but there are not much details given about it.
Thank you, Guruji.
Yeah, anything else anyone would like to ask or add? Okay, so then we will move ahead. Sometimes Brahma and Vishnu are described as identical in the Puranas, right? One should, however, understand this statement by the example of the sun and the jewel Suryakanta, which is invested with the light of the sun. So in one sense, sun and tube light are identical. In the sense, both have the capacity to illuminate. The purpose of both of them is to illuminate. Both illuminate. But the similarity ends there. You know, otherwise they are quite different also. So he says, Srila Vishnu Jagadakur is clarifying here that don't be bewildered when you read in some portions of the scriptures which actually seem to equate Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma. So he says that is so in that sense the equality is in the sense that both have a very superlative level of control. But having said that, there is no comparison of the degree of control that Lord Vishnu has and Lord Brahmaji has. And in fact, Brahmaji's ability to control comes from the empowerment of Vishnu. So there is no question of comparing. But in one sense, there is comparison. There is similarity because both of them do have control like that. So here here it is mentioned. Suryakanta is like a magnifying glass which takes the rays of the sun and manifests the heat of the sun by burning paper, etc. You know, if you have done that experiment, right? While you were kids, at least you would have done, you know, holding a magnifying glass, and below the magnifying glass, you know, you hold a cotton or paper and you see how it burns it. You know, it focuses that sunlight. In this way only Brahma is considered to be non-different, right? In some Mahakalpas, you see, even Shiva is a Jiva like Brahma, invested with the power by the Lord. So this is there. Kvachit Jiva Visheshatvam Harasyoktam Videriva. This is mentioned in, this is a verse from the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Laghu Bhagavatamrita says, Videriva, just like Lord Brahma, sometimes a particular jiva, harasya visheshatvam uktam. It is mentioned the position of Lord Shiva is sometimes bestowed upon to a jiva for a very short duration of time, just for the purpose of annihilation. But there are not much details given. Why, how, for what purpose and all those things are not given. Thus, sometimes Shiva is classed with Brahma in such statements as Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivataihi Samatve Naiva Viksheta Sa Pashandi Bhavedruvam. So it is mentioned in, this is quoted in Hari Bhakti Vilas, that one who considers Narayana to be equivalent to Brahma, Shiva or other such demigods, he is a Pashandi, he is an atheist. Now if you see, is Lord Shiva a demigod? No, he is not a demigod. But the Shastra seems to indicate that he is put on the same level as the demigods. Here, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is from Harinam Chintamani, he says that the context is that this indicates sometimes Ajiva Tattva, who is bestowed the role of Lord Shiva. So it indicates that. Okay. So this is about how in some cases Lord Shiva and Brahma can be compared, and Lord Shiva, Vishnu can be compared, and Brahma and Vishnu can be compared like that. Any quick comments before we move forward?
Prabhu, I have a question.
Yes, Mataji.
You said that Lord Brahma is not a demigod. So how do we then define a demigod?
Brahma is a demigod. Lord Shiva is not a demigod.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, Brahma is a demigod. Okay.
Brahma is a demigod. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Anything else anyone would like to add? Okay. So, the next topic, it's, we just have 1 minute to wind up the session, but we have qualities of other conscious jivas. I will just, without, before going into the qualities, I will just read the initial section and then we will see what are those qualities. So this is one kind of bifurcation, right? You cannot compare Vishnu to Lord Shiva, Brahma or other demigods, because even though Lord Shiva and Vishnu are Ishvara Tattvas, but amongst the Ishvara Tattvas, Lord Vishnu is Vishnu Tattva superior and Lord Shiva is Shambhu Tattva inferior. And between Brahma and Vishnu, Brahma is Jiva Tattva only, and the other demigods are also Jiva Tattva. So there is no comparison. So this is one of the ways of understanding the superiority of Vishnu. Another understanding is based on the qualities that they possess. Okay. So he says, Krishna in Goloka is the original and supreme Vishnu form, being ornamented with 64 transcendental qualities to enhance his blissful activities by which he performs his activities. So, Vishnu, Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, he possesses 64 transcendental qualities. Okay. So, Krishna, 64. And then, the Purusha avataras and other plenary avataras all possess the 60 qualities to carry out their function. So then all other Vishnu forms, they possess 60 qualities only. What are those additional 4 qualities? We will see this. And Krishna expands as 2 types of conscious particles. The first is the ordinary jiva, who has 50 qualities to some degree. The second are the demigods of the same 50 qualities but to a greater degree. So the jivas have 50 qualities, of which the demigods have them to a higher degree, and other lower living entities have these 50 qualities to a lower degree, right? In addition, Lord Shiva possesses 5 more qualities, okay? Lord Shiva possesses 55 qualities. 50, all the jivas including Brahmaji. Lord Shiva possesses 5 more. All the Vishnu forms possesses 5 more, 60 qualities. And Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, he has 64 qualities. Vishnu has all these qualities plus 5 more, which are not found in other living entities. In this way, we can see that Vishnu or Narayana with 60 qualities is the Lord, and Shiva and the demigods are his servants. Greater than the ordinary jivas are the demigods and Shiva, and greater than Shiva is Vishnu, who is the Lord of the Jivas and the Lord of the demigods. Okay. Therefore, whoever considers Vishnu on the same level as the demigods is very ignorant. So this is a description based on the qualities possessed. So Krishna 64, Lord Vishnu 60, Lord Shiva 55, the demigods 50 qualities in high quantity, the other living entities have 50 qualities in smaller quantity. So therefore, you know, there is a very clear cut gradation based on the manifest qualities also. Okay, what are those 64 qualities? We will see next week. But before that, are there any final comments, discussion points before we wind up for the day? Okay, so thank you all very much for your patient listening and active participation. So we'll continue this discussion next Saturday for few of us and Friday night for few others who are in the United States. So thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur Ki Jai. Shri Madhurya Kadambini Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhupada. Thank you, Prabhupada.
Jai. Hare Krishna.